They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Hello, and welcome back to Magellan's at the Movies, the winner of the 2024 Best Overall Film Reviewing Podcast. In an interview held afterwards, the judges said it was the least guilty they had ever felt about selling their vote, which I think is I'm very flattered by. I am your host, Elliot Mogollyans. I'm joined by my brother, my co-host, the light of my life, Nathan Mogollyans.
Weird thing to say.
Nathan, right now, the biggest movie in theaters right now is Lilo and Stitch, but we're not going to talk about that because neither of us are going to see it. The second biggest is probably Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, the possibly final entry in the franchise. I've heard conflicting reports about it. I have seen it, and I think it's pretty good. I am confident that if I watched it a second time, I would like it less.
Dang.
But I think, like, if you are like me and you like maximalism, and I'm not talking like your mamby-pamby, oh, there's explosions in Infinity War maximalism. I'm talking about hair-raising, breath-catching, teeth-rattling maximalism, then this is the movie for you, and you should probably see it in theaters because it is an assault on the senses. And the final, showcase action scene on the biplanes, that's pretty freaking impressive that Tom Cruise is doing all of that himself, or most of it, practically. So I would say if you like Mission Impossible, it's worth a trip to the theater. If you've never seen Mission Impossible and you're thinking, is this a good place to jump in? I'm going to say probably not. This movie is very keyed into the franchise as a whole. It's very much, it would be like starting your Marvel experience with Endgame.
Wow.
So, Nathan, you haven't seen this movie, so no one cares what you think about it.
Well, I did see, if you're someone who loves I Think You Should Leave, I went to Friendship, which is actually doing really well at the box office right now. The showing I went to was pretty packed for like a Monday night showing, and I thought it was really funny. I went with a buddy of mine, Jake Brend, friend of the podcast. He loves I Think You Should Leave. He loved the movie, thought it was really funny. I also went with my wife, who has not seen I Think You Should Leave, and she did not find it funny very much at all. But I if you like I Think You Should Leave, I can practically guarantee that you will find this movie funny. It's operating in a very similar avenue, and it made me laugh out loud more than once.
All right, so there's a little something for everyone in theaters right now, from the comedic to the action to the family-friendly in Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah.
Some other stuff I'd like to talk about. Nathan, have you seen the trailer for It, Welcome to Derry? Because that came out.
No, I haven't.
Well, I have. And I have to say, I'm confused by this endeavor, because generally, a prequel or any installment in a franchise is meant to, well, I'll confine myself to prequels here. Prequels are meant to, like, shade in the gaps of characters and storylines and stuff, but that is not possible for this story because it's not set in the Cretaceous period when it arrived. And it doesn't seem like there's nothing to learn about Pennywise or Derry or how all this... It seems to me, and I haven't seen the show, so maybe I'll be proven wrong, but it seems to me like it's set up to be just it in TV form.
Which we already have it in TV form. The original
That's true.
Adaptation was a TV miniseries.
Bill Skarsgård in TV form.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, if that's what they want to do, do it. Nathan, are you interested in this? We both realized that the first It isn't that good. But you're not invested in this franchise.
No. And doing... The way they're doing this prequel is not geared to interest me. If they had done, original, Pilgrims versus Pennywise or something, that would be something that would be enticing to me. That would be interesting. But
Pennywise versus dinosaurs?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if dinosaurs have kids and could be, upset at their passing.
Well, Land Before Time.
Yeah.
They have kids.
So, yeah, there's ways they could have done an It prequel that would have convinced me to find the time to watch it, but just doing it with different kids is not gonna do it.
I think you're right. I hadn't even thought about that, but just you putting that idea into my head, now I'm thinking, well, it set in the colonial era would have been sick. Why didn't they do that?
Or even just doing whenever Pennywise appeared and first took the form of Pennywise, right? Because presumably before that, he was, before the circus came to town and he adopted the mannerisms of this clown, presumably he was doing other stuff. But, even that would be slightly more intriguing to me than... Not slightly, that would be way more intriguing to me than what this show is. But I guess this is probably way cheaper than having to, do a ton of work on costumes and stuff
like that.
Put
in effort.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's expensive to make an effort. That's true. But it's set in a comparable timeline to the first movie.
Yeah.
Time period, that is. So, yeah. Not sure. I don't see what the point is. What's the point of even going on?
Okay. All right. I did have one more thing to kind of banter about, Elliot, and this is a quote that I'm going to read you, and then I just want your thoughts on this quote, because I thought it was kind of interesting.
I'm going to hate this.
I'm sure you will. But I've been reading this book about Hollywood fiascos, famous flops through the history of Hollywood, and at the end of each of them, the author of the book has each chapter is about a different movie that flopped, and at the end of each chapter, he has a quote from someone involved in the production where they kind of, explain a little bit of their thinking. They explain, what really went wrong, what, fundamentally was wrong about the movie. And so this one quote, I think, is very indicative of, I've seen similar quotes from, other film producers in the 80s, so I think it is a prevailing opinion in Hollywood. And so here's the quote: "Perhaps none of our pictures were classics in the tradition of Gone with the Wind or Citizen Kane, but I've never believed that any of us really make movies for posterity. There's a difference between today's motion pictures and the art of Rembrandt, Da Vinci, and Michelangelo, which has lived and flourished for centuries. Probably not a single picture produced by anyone will be anything but a historical memento in a few hundred years." Which I thought was interesting. As someone who loves movies, I kind of would love for that to not be true, I guess. But, what do you think? You're a student of history. You're a student of literature, which I'd say is, one of the longest lasting art forms. in the history of mankind. Do you think this producer is right? Do you think movies are destined to be nothing but a curioso in the annals of history?
I couldn't even begin to guess.
Oh, man.
I'm very literal-minded, so it's hard for me to extrapolate the medium of film into the future, because the predictions, by their very nature, cannot be literal in the sense that they can't be concrete. Because, like, anything could happen. Maybe we could discover that movies cause cancer, and then they would be a curioso. Maybe we discover that movies cure cancer, and then they'd probably be around forever and be in every household of every nation. So I could not speculate.
Interesting.
It seems... I say I could not speculate, and now I'm going to speculate a little
Engage
bit.
Engage in speculation.
Yeah.
Good.
I will say that it seems to me, just from my own vantage point here in time, it feels unlikely that movies are going to... What? People are just going to stop making movies? Or it's going to become a niche interest? Why would that happen?
Well, you know, every year people are saying, you know, cinema is dying. I think the fear is eventually movies get too expensive to be made and don't get enough return. And so, kind of similar to video games having to go to, like, a different sort of format. Like, every video game is coming out with a battle pass. It's a season sort of structure, as opposed to in the past when it was just you go out, buy the video game, and then you move on with your life. So, I don't know. I think there's possibilities that movies might, you know, kind of fall out in that sense. I think the odds of nobody making movies are really slim, as long as, like, one dude with a camera, you know, wants to go out with his buddies and shoot some nonsense in the forest or something. So, I don't know. I also thought it was interesting in light of our episode last week where we covered Sherlock Jr., which I think you could argue is already just kind of a interesting historical memento more than it's, you know, something that people are revisiting constantly. So,
well, if you judge something by whether or not it's globally ubiquitous in the way that, like, the Sistine Chapel or Mona Lisa is, I think then with those lenses on, you would say, like, oh, well, literature is going to be a curioso. What does curioso even mean?
It just, you know, like a curiosity, like something that's neat to see in a museum, but not something you would really ever interact with outside of that.
Well, most books, I've never seen a book in a museum. Actually, that's not true. I've seen books in museums.
Yeah, we've seen the Gutenberg Bible, bro.
That's true. I've also seen Abraham Lincoln's Bible.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah. I was going to make a joke that I'm not going to make anymore.
Good one.
Yeah, so I can't even remember what I was going to say. Most paintings, sculptures, books, plays, movies, chapel roofs are not written about and talked about, and the subject of artistic pilgrimages. Why does it sound like I'm pronouncing that wrong?
I don't know.
And yet those mediums continue to truck on. Chapel roofs a little bit less than the others, but humans are artistic creatures. They like making art. They like consuming art. So the odds of mediums. Obviously, there will be valleys and peaks. But yeah, I mean, like, what is Paramount going to do if they don't make movies?
I don't know.
Get into the video game business?
Maybe.
Start selling real estate?
Yeah.
You know what my solution is, Nathan? Just make cheaper movies.
Well, you know, we would love to do that. We would love to see that. I don't know what's causing these movies to be so expensive, because...
That is the question, right? Because Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny cost, like, almost $500 million to make.
Yeah.
Where is that money on the screen?
It's good, yeah.
Because it's not in the special effects.
Yeah, I'd love to see just an audit of some of these movies that come out where... And that's kind of his point in the book a lot of the times, is he's like, people way overspend on movies that do not have a prayer of ever... Like, they would have to be generationally good. He talks... One of the directors is like, I'm not worried about spending so much money on this because, like, Titanic had a lot of problems and then it made a ton of money. And it's like, yeah, that's the highest grossing movie of all time. If your movie has to be the highest grossing of all time in order for, like, your budget to work... You need to rework your butt. Like, you need to rewrite the movie. Anyway, with that discussion of, you know, the future of our cinema, we're here in the future. We're discussing a very recent movie for this episode. Elliot, you picked
a very recent flop.
I would argue a flop because of the worst impulses of current day. That, like, this was a movie I wanted to see in theaters because... It had good word of mouth. I had heard from multiple people, including you, Elliot, that you had enjoyed it. And it was only in theaters for like 3 weeks before being shuttled to streaming and video on demand, which is a lot of movies suffer this fate. Right as it seems as though they could turn a profit, they get shunted off to the old interwebs. But we're talking about it. Elliot, you know, intro this movie for us. What's it about? What's the deal? And why are we talking about it?
Well, we're talking about it because that's just how we've decided to spend our an afternoon every week. The movie in question is Black Bag. It's directed by Steven Soderbergh. Yeah. Came out this year. This is the movie that I went to see instead of Mickey 17. Because...
Great call. That was a great move.
Well... I had heard things about Mickey 17 that were not appealing to me. And I honestly had been planning on going back to see... I wanted to see both, but then you watched Mickey 17 and told me that it was terrible. So I was like, I guess I'll just wait and watch it some other time. But anyway, so this is a movie about a married pair of spies, George and Catherine, played by... Michael Fassbender and Kate Blanchett, respectively. And George, our main man, has been entrusted with figuring out where this mysterious thing, he's not 100% sure what it is, it's called Severus. This some kind of weapon has been leaked from, I can't remember. Did they say that? Are they in MI6 or SS?
It's got to be MI6, I think.
I think you're probably right. Well, we'll just say British intelligence.
Yeah.
There's an oxymoron. That's a joke.
Wow.
That's a joke. I'm good kidding, one, okay? That's like the easiest joke in the world. Because you could make that about any American intelligence, Chinese intelligence.
You're really, like, you're doing a lot with this joke that did not land.
I'm not, whatever. Let's just move on. Let's stop digging. Let's put down the shovel and get out of the hole. So they're in British intelligence. George is trying to figure this out. And his wife is, like, the number one suspect. And so the movie is about the unmasking of the conspiracy. So you've got plenty of subterfuge, plenty of reveals, lots of people talking in rooms or talking on boats. That's pretty much the movie.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the movie. Mm-hmm. That's the movie. And this was, when I watched it, this was my favorite movie of the year.
Wow.
I really, really enjoyed this movie. And honestly, the real reason why we're talking about this movie is because I was desperate for someone, anyone in my life to have also watched this movie so I could discuss it with them. I tried to get mom and dad to watch it. I wanted to get Lydia to watch it. So it was just all over the place. I just wanted someone to talk about this movie with. Nathan, I've been a little nervous, honestly, about this because, first of all, because I was worried that when I watched it again, I wouldn't like it as much as the first time, because that's just something that happens with me. And I was nervous that you wouldn't like it, because it seems like we cannot like the same movie at the same time for the life of us. So put me out of my misery. Let me hear your opening thoughts for Black Bag.
Yeah, my opening thoughts are I enjoyed this movie. I wouldn't say I loved it, and it's a movie that... There's a lot of movies like this that I know they're made by directors with a lot of vision. They're made by just a cast and crew that I know is putting a lot of effort into stuff. And it's a movie that, as I'm watching it, I feel like there's a lot of stuff happening in the film, maybe thematically, maybe just in terms of, you know, it's a really intricate plot. And so the movie ends, and I get your emotion of being like, I really want to talk to someone about this, because it feels like there's a lot of stuff, but it doesn't necessarily feel like I'm getting all of it by myself. So I'm very interested in hearing about, you know, what you really like about it and what is interesting about it, because I'm very much open to bringing my score as it currently stands up to a higher level, because I believe there's a lot of stuff going on in this movie. I already feel like there's a lot of interesting things happening in this film. So yeah, I wouldn't say I'm coming into this probably at the same level as of excitement and enjoyment as you are, but I'm very willing to like be brought to that place over the course of this episode.
Well, so I'll say that I like this a little bit less than the first time I watched it, which is hardly to say that I dislike it. I still really enjoy it. I still would say probably that it's my favorite movie that's come out this year, although I haven't seen that many.
Yeah.
I've seen like six, I think.
Nice.
Yeah, but There came a point in the movie, I can't really remember when, because it wasn't something on screen that happened that kind of prompted this realization for me. It was just kind of like a slowly coming to the realization of, I was like, this is a mature movie, which is so much different than a movie being hard to understand or really violent or really... or full of nudity and sexual content, right? Like people, a 12-year-old sneaks into John Wick and they can pretty much understand what's happening.
Yeah.
But a 12-year-old can sneak into Stalker. I'm just going to keep on, I watched Stalker recently and I hated it, so I'm just going to keep on harping on that. And they'll fail to understand it. Or I'll say Megalopolis. They'll sneak into Megalopolis and they won't know what's going on. But that's because Francis Ford doesn't know what's going on. So, because maturity is... There's an entire genre worth of difference between violence, sex, allegedly heady themes, and maturity, right? I think back to... We talked about this when we reviewed The Simpsons movie, that The Simpsons at its best was mature, not because it was inappropriate, but because it was dealing with situations and ideas that people who have not matured mentally or physically or just in their experiences don't understand. And I think that that was such a breath of fresh air, because I watch a lot of movies, all right? Yeah. We both watch a lot of movies. And I don't know what your experience is, Nathan. I'd be very interested to learn, because it might just be the movies that I choose to watch. Because it's very often that I'll watch a movie and I will have the reaction of like, wow, that's a movie for adults. In the way that, and you would need an adult mind in order to understand and appreciate it more than it's just not appropriate for a child to watch John Wick blow someone's head off. And the other thing, and this is why I really wanted Mom and Dad to watch this, and I settled for you, is because I was so interested in how this movie deals with marriage, right? Because so often in movies, I just hate movies, man. They're just awful. So often in movies, a relationship is just shorthand for a general sense of connection, right? I just recently watched a movie called Get Carter, and that's about Michael Caine trying to get revenge for his brother. And it doesn't really matter that they're brothers. The movie isn't about brotherhood or the relationship that brothers have. It could have just as easily been his father or his girlfriend or his son or his wife or anyone else, because the movies, that relationship is just to let you understand that Michael Caine's angry and he's going to shoot some people about this. But in this movie is about marriage in a way that, like, Andor is about rebellion as opposed to the original Star Wars. Or, as I've heard, and maybe you can confirm this for me, the Iron Claw is about brotherhood.
Sure.
As opposed to Get Carter. So, yeah, I just really appreciate this movie's maturity and its attention to that kind of thing, because I've never been married for a day in my life, but I just really like that nothing is incidental in this movie. It's not taking those kinds of emotional or narrative shortcuts. Like, it's actually, it's making marriage and, like, the choice to make a commitment to another person central to its story, rather than just having these characters be married so you understand, oh, well, that's why they're, like, that's why they're fond of each other, and that's why they're fighting for each other. So that's, like, really high level why I really liked this movie. And there's a lot of other lower level stuff, like, it's really, I think it looks really, really nice. I really enjoy that opening tracking shot of George. I just really like opening tracking shots of people walking through things. Michael Fassbender, Cate Blanchett, holy cow. Talk about a combination of great actors. And yeah, there's some legitimate some moments that honestly made me laugh out loud. So I'm starting to ramble, so I'm just going to cut it off right there. And Nathan, you can say something if you want.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with your assessment of this as a mature movie. I think you're spot on in terms of, you know, that distinction between a movie that deals with mature topics and a movie that deals with mature topics in a mature fashion, in a sense where as you're watching it, you're like, yeah, an adult who's like been through some stuff has written this. I think, you know, the two movies that pop to my mind, just because I love it, Blade Runner 2049, I feel like is a very mature movie that, you know, is dealing with heady topics in a way that is taking them very seriously. Another one, just because we were talking about it before this episode, Kramer versus Kramer. That's another movie that I think is dealing with mature things in a mature way. And this is another example of this. One of the things I was struck by as I was watching the movie was just how much the trailers were like doing their best to convince you this was going to be like a sick spy thriller and not just 2 hours of people talking about how they find it difficult to not lie to people, and that ruins their intimacy with other people. Like, when a car blows up, which isn't a spoiler because it's in most of the trailers, that's like the only explosion in the entire film. Right. And I think literally the trailer involves every single moment of like a character using a gun and a character, like any amount of action. The entirety of the action of this movie, in the sense of like action, like people fighting or being in conflict, is in the trailer for this movie. Because the rest of it is, like you said, this discussion of what does it mean to be in commitment to another person. And even at a deeper level, I feel like the movie is about what does it mean to like be truthful to another person. Like, what does lying do? What does it mean to lie to someone? And what does it mean to be honest with someone? And I think those are really interesting things. I mean, I have not, I've been married, I think, like 60 days in my life, so I don't have a ton on top of you. But that, you know, that question of, I do think it is very true that every day there's a question in a marriage or any sort of relationship that you're trying to foster with another person, even if it's like you're trying to be really good friends with someone. Every day there's a question of like, okay, how honest can I be to this person? And I would say the thesis of this movie is that like every time you choose to not be honest, you are damaging like your ability to be truly, you know, in a relationship with that person, because you're, you know, the Kate and George are surrounded by everyone in MI6 is cheating on everyone else. It's ridiculous. But the, you know, the one conversation that George has with the younger woman, I can't remember her name.
Clarissa,
thank you. She asks him, she's like, when it's so easy to lie and when it's in your nature to lie, how are you supposed to tell the truth? And I think that's very, you know, true of, you know, this is kind of the same reason why I think The Lobster is like one of the greatest modern romances or movies about modern love, is because both of them are kind of like, we have created a society that is not conducive to true intimacy and connection with another human being, because we've made a world where, yeah, it's easy to lie, it's easy to like do things that are gonna hurt other people, and it's easy to do those things like quickly without thinking about it. So the question becomes, how do you not do that? Which I think, you know, I think is very interesting. And again, that's something that, you know, when you're younger, when I was younger, that wasn't something that was on my mind. That wasn't something at the forefront of my mind was like, how can I, you know, get the cool kids at the lunch table to like me and think I'm neat and like laugh at my jokes. And now I'm an adult and I'm like, how can I make my wife laugh at the same jokes?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, you watch Star Wars as a kid and you just understand that Han and Leia like each other in some sort of way. So again, it's just that difference of even the difference of like between Schindler's List and The Zone of Interest, which is absolutely not a knock against Schindler's List. It's on our best of the 90s list.
Yeah.
But they show Schindler's List in high schools because high schoolers can understand it, because it's not really about the Holocaust. Well, it's about the Holocaust, but it's not about how the Holocaust happens or things like that happen, why people go along with atrocities. It's just kind of like getting you into that emotional space, whereas Zone of Interest is much more scholarly in its examination of atrocity and collaboration and stuff like that. And yeah, George and Catherine have an understanding that transcends a lot of the levels of relationships that we see in the movie. This movie has a very small cast.
Yeah.
But you've got like three relationships. There's George and Catherine, Clarissa and Freddie Freddy's very funny. And then Zoe and Stokes. Sure. I'm very impressed that I remembered all those names.
Good job, Elliot.
But all the two other relationships, the ones between Clarissa and Freddy, and then Zoe and Stokes, are flailing in a way that George and Catherine's isn't, because George and Catherine have, like, decades worth of experience and also have a deeper commitment than just physical attraction, which is kind of the sense that you get from the other ones. And if I've said it once on this program, I've said it probably a dozen times, I'm so much less interested in fictional relationships that seem to be based on a physical attraction exclusively than I am in a relationship that represents an understanding, right? A commitment. And this is why I wanted Mom and Dad to watch it, because Terry and Eduardo Magallanes just celebrated their 36th anniversary. Wow. So everyone, send them your congratulations via us. Please don't write, try to figure out what their address is.
Yeah.
So I really wanted that perspective of someone, people who have been in this relationship for years in the way that George and Catherine have, and I'm just stuck with you. That's another joke.
So sorry.
That's a joke. But yeah, I just really like it, man. And it's, again, it's just, the thing that I keep coming back to is that this movie is such a breath of fresh air in a cinematic scene that is mostly dominated by movies that are flashier and more action-packed and enjoyable, right? Very enjoyable. Like Mission Impossible. Mm-hmm. Very enjoyable movie. But it is not that different from movies like Novocaine or The Amateur or whatever you got.
Yeah.
So it's just nice to see something new, something different, something a little more thoughtful.
Absolutely. Well, and I thought the one scene in this movie that really jumped out to me as like, oh, this is a different type of movie, is at about the halfway point of the film, or maybe a little bit past halfway. Like we already said, George is suspicious of Catherine. He's been given a couple different reasons to be suspicious. Stokes has given him a lead that seems to point to Catherine, and then he's kind of caught her in a couple of, not lies, but he thinks that she's lying to him. And Catherine, at this point, is kind of given similar reasons to be suspicious of George, that she's told by Freddy that, hey, George did this thing, and it's now resulted in this guy escaping prison, escaping, you know, confinement. So, like, this is not good. I think George is, you know, the mole, or I think George is kind of suspicious. And they both lay down to go to bed. And this is where I think if this movie was going to be a pure thriller, this is the point in the movie where, right, it would be ratcheted up to 10. Mm. Like, if you think of, like, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, like, this is what we're getting to. Like, they are in the weeds, and they're going to have to deal with things. And what happens in this film is, I can't remember if it's George or Catherine, but one of them turns over and is like, hey, I think we're getting screwed with. Like, I think people are feeding us misinformation, and they compare notes, and they're like, yeah, I think you're right. And I'm like, wow, that, you know, it's kind of bad in some sense, because it kind of completely undermines the finale of the movie. Like, the rest of the movie is kind of boring, because it's now just like, which of these four fairly suspicious people are setting them up? And, you know, I think personally the movie kind of goes towards an anti-climax, in the sense that there's nothing very exciting about the end of the movie. It's not like a huge reveal. They just kind of reveal things that you could have probably guessed. But again, I don't think this movie's intention is to have some big shootout or some exciting thing, because I think the movie is about that moment where you're right. you're face to face with someone that you're trying to be honest to, and you have been given reasons to not be honest with them. In this movie, those reasons are, you know, you think that they're like a Russian spy or something. In real life, it's reasons like, you know, I am about to tell them something that's not very flattering about myself, and so I think they're going to lose respect for me. I think they're not going to like me as much as they do. And still making the choice to be like, no, it's important to be honest. And again, we can see that all through the movie as all of the other relationships in the movie fall apart and flounder because they're lying to each other instead of just being honest about what's going on with them. So I think that moment is, to me, the like pinnacle of the film because it's everything that the movie is about.
Yeah. And it's interesting because this movie is actually very brisk. This movie is 90 minutes long.
Okay.
So it's basically like, I think if you counted the scenes in it, it would be fairly short, a fairly short list, because most of the scenes are pretty long. Just scenes of people talking with each other. And so just to like kind of transition out, because we're kind of just saying the same thing here. I think that another thing that really helps this movie is the dialogue. Like the script is really sharp. It's really slick. It's got that just slightly unrealistic pacing to it. Like no one stutters like I'm doing right now. No one says, like I just did right there. Everyone knows exactly what to say at exactly the right moment, which I think is kind of the Soderbergh influence. I'm not super familiar with his filmography, but my impression of him is that he likes things just a little slick, a little snappy. So yeah, you've got the script. It sings at the best of times. And even when it's not, even when your people aren't like getting off one-liners or the equivalent of this movie's one-liners, there are some great jokes in this movie. Like at the very first scene, or one of the very first scenes, is a dinner party, and it's revealed that George surveilled his father and exposed his father's affair. And this Zoe, who's a therapist, is like, that must have been very traumatic. How old were you? And Freddie says he was 37. Which that was one of the jokes that made me laugh out loud in my apartment. Because, oh man, it's just perfectly timed. And everyone's like, whoa, what? But it also serves to demonstrate George's commitment. Like, he sums up his character, or a big part of his character, in this scene when he just says, I don't like liars.
Yeah.
Which I think is, that's one of the things that drives him both in his job and in his relationship, because part of his understanding with Catherine is that they don't want to lie to each other. And so in that scene with Clarissa, when they're looking at the satellite feed, he essentially says there are some things that we just don't say to each other, that we have that understanding so we don't lie to each other. So he's like, I watch her, I assume she watches me. The implication being that they don't say it because that would entail them having to lie to each other, of being like, oh no, I don't watch you on satellites, you're crazy son of a gun.
Hopefully he doesn't watch her on satellites very often, because it kind of causes issues in this film. True.
Misappropriation of national resources.
So true. But yeah, like you said, the dialogue is really good. The movie looks really fantastic. The one scene where Stokes and George are in the boat and the camera is like following the boat and just like part of the camera is underwater, that's such a great... It just looks really neat, and I feel like, you know, this is where if you're really pretentious, you can break out the pretentious glasses and be like, well, it's because there's more afoot, and, like, the plot is murky at this point. No, that's some nonsense. Here's why the shot is done like this, because it looks neat, and it keeps me like, interested in the film because what I'm looking at is interesting. And, yeah, like you said, it's got a great opening one-er, a classic, opening shot following the person going through a busy club. Although this club has, like, one tiny room with one DJ. I don't see how this club could be very successful. But anyway, yeah, the movie looks really fantastic. And, yeah, it's just such a small film, and everyone does a great job. All of the acting is really good, even beyond just George and Kate. All of the actors for the other four major characters do really great. And then, Pierce Brosnan is also in the movie, and he does a pretty good job.
So angry.
But, yeah, he is a little peeved, I suppose.
Yeah, you can definitely tell that this movie is made by a veteran filmmaker, right? It's like watching, it's like going to a concert put on by someone who's spent their entire life playing the piano.
Yeah.
There's no, beyond just there being no wrong notes, it's just suffused with a confidence and an authority in the medium. That you're like, yep, this guy's been around the block. He doesn't make those kinds of amateur mistakes that other filmmakers make. But nothing against amateur filmmakers. I'm sure that Steven Soderbergh, in his first movie, made those mistakes.
Actually, he did it. He won the Palme d'Or with his first movie.
Well, that does not mean that he didn't make mistakes.
I've seen it. It's pretty dang good.
Well, okay, maybe it's, I don't know, I haven't seen it, but my point is that this is a filmmaker's film, right? This is a movie for people who like movies to watch and appreciate and to just see all the areas where it's just handled perfectly. Like, it sounds like an exaggeration, but, like, it's just the way that it should be. It's hard to describe, but, like, it's the feeling that I get when I watch most of this movie.
Yeah. I do have to kind of flip over to my negatives here, though, Elliot.
That's all right. I also have some negatives.
Oh, perfect. Mine is kind of just based off of kind of exactly what I said before, that the movie, while I appreciate its smallness and its commitment to these concepts that we've been talking about, such as, you know, trust and fidelity and such things, the movie does spend a lot of time on the questions of the, like, kind of thriller aspect of the movie, of, you know, the questions of who's the mole, and whether or not Catherine is lying to him. And so it feels, and, you know, this is kind of a tough thing, it feels like then the movie gets much more boring by the end of it. The final scene of George and Kate revealing kind of who had been playing who and who had been doing what fell really flat for me. Because I was like, this is not a particularly inspired villain. There's very little twist. There's very little twist by nature of, right, it's a small cast. There's only four people. It ends up being that three of the four of them were involved in the kind of conspiracy at some point or another, or the differing conspiracies. It's revealed there's two separate kind of things going on. But it just falls really flat to me. And it feels very much like the movie is just, you know, it has to conclude this story because this is the story that the movie's been telling. But it's not as interesting as the beginning of the... Like, the beginning of the movie has a lot of interesting thematic elements with the characters talking about lying and telling the truth and these sorts of things, as well as very interesting, you know, investigative sort of pieces that we can see George putting together the pieces that he's kind of being given as to that are pointing him towards his wife being the mole, and he's you know, interrogating different people and doing different cool science, you know, spy sort of things. And then the back half just has a really long lie detector scene that I kind of struggle to see what is interesting about it, besides the overuse of Dutch angles, zing. And just this back half of the movie falls a little flat to me, because it just doesn't feel like the screenwriter or the director really sticks the landing in terms of bringing all of the ideas that the movie is about home. It just kind of ends the story that the movie is about, but it doesn't necessarily feel like a thematic ending to the story, if that makes any sense.
It makes sense. I would have to disagree.
Sure.
I disagree partially. I do agree that the movies that kind of like the thematic conclusion for the movie is George and Catherine's discussion in bed. And then this is kind of the formal conclusion of the movie is the conclusion of the Severus plotline. But I enjoy this scene and the lie detector scene for the same reasons that I enjoy watching Batman fight people or watching Max and Furiosa work together in Fury Road, just because I enjoy watching the masters at work. So I like getting to see how George attacks lies to get at the truth, and how George and Catherine get all of these people into their home again, and then just kind of expose the conspiracy. Like, there's just something inherently entertaining to me, or engaging to me, about seeing smart people do smart things, or strong people do strong things.
Sure.
That kind of thing. My negative, the thing that I would say is most wore off a little bit of the movie's sheen, just a little bit of the movie's sheen to me this time around, was the thing about the money. Like, Catherine's fear of being, I guess, destitute? It's a little strange. I think that the reason it sticks out so much to me is because the movie is so lean. Like, there's so little fat on it. Like I said, so much of it is not incidental, that this thing Catherine mentions a few times being worried about money. And we don't know if George and Catherine are in financial straits. Like, that's never established. We don't really know that she mentions not wanting to end up like her mother, but that's about it. And then that thread is dropped for an hour of the movie and comes in quite literally at the 11th hour, right on the final shot of the movie. She mentions, George mentions the money that Stokes was using. Spoiler alert. Stokes was using to frame Catherine is still in their account. And so I was like, why do we need this? My pure speculation. I said I don't like to speculate, and now I'm just speculating all over the place. My speculation is that the movie is already so brief that they were like, dude, if we cut this thread, we're getting down to like 80, 70 minutes here. Like, we got to keep this thing feature length. But I don't know. If it was me, I would have just cut it, because it doesn't really have any impact on the movie, and it just stands out for being incidental in a film whose greatest quality is its attention to detail and the deliberateness with which it approaches pretty much every other aspect of its narrative.
I think that's fair. My two thoughts on this, though, is I think firstly, her being worried about money does help the movie, because it provides some explanation as to why she might be the mole. That otherwise we're kind of left in the dark. And we're given, right, George is given more reason to believe, like, oh, she might be the mole because she is concerned about money. And so the discovery that the mole was paid £6 million is further evidence to him that it could be Catherine, because he knows that she's concerned about money. The other thing I would say is money is like one of the number one things that married couples fight about. So it could just be that they're throwing in some more stuff for the married folks.
Well, they don't really fight. They don't really fight about it. Like,
sure. Yeah.
She just says, he says, it's weird how much you care about money. And she says, like, it's weird how much you don't.
Yeah.
So they don't,
I don't understand how they, how can they even be in poor straight? Like, they're in a super nice house and they both have surely, like, really good play. I mean, I don't know how, exactly how much MI6 would pay, but surely it's not like minimum wage.
Well, that's the other thing, right? That it's not actually established clearly whether or not they're in trouble. Like, do they need that money, or is it just nice to have in the way that £7 million is just nice to have?
Yeah.
And it is, you're right. Like, they dress really nice. They eat sumptuous meals.
Yeah.
And actually, I listened to a podcast hosted by three British men.
Wow.
And in one of the recent episodes, they talked about how houses in movies set in the UK are so misleading, because houses in the average house in the UK is just minuscule, right? And one of the people said that he had a friend from America who came to the UK and was just shocked at how tiny the houses are. So this movie is just propagating that myth.
Funny. All right, Ellie, are you ready to give your rating for this movie?
I surely am.
All right, let's do it then.
All right, I really enjoy this movie. This is probably, for my money, this is the best movie that I've seen this year. I say for my money as if someone else is going to say, no, this is the best movie that you've seen this year. This is my favorite movie of the year. It's just, if you're looking for something different, something that's mature, this is the movie that you've been looking for. It's slick. Performances are great across the board. Lovely music, not something that I would listen to casually, but it gets the job done. Yeah, this movie's like a fine piece of a finely crafted leather product. Something that you just appreciate the craftsmanship in it. Mm. And the maturity and the intelligence that's in this movie, that's in not a lot of the movies that I watch, which again could just be because I'm watching the wrong movies. I just have like just these tiny little quibbles about characterization and a little bit of it could have been tightened up in terms of marrying the thematic and the formal elements, but by far the headline of this movie is that this is really good. You should absolutely watch it if you're looking for something mature and patient and intelligent. I'm going to give this sucker an A.
Wow. All right. Yeah, I feel a lot of the same things. I think I have a bit of more than quibbles with the marrying of the thematic and formal elements of the movie. So I'm going to give it a 7.7 out of 10.
Alrighty then.
I'm trying to move us along.
That's fine. Well, then let's move along. Recommendations. My recommendation for this movie is going to be Zero Dark Thirty.
Oh.
I chose this because this is, again, very mature movie. And also because I think it has the same kind of attention to detail. Like, this is a Black Ops procedural. In terms of, it's just about like the process. That's what a procedural means. It's about the process of being in intelligence. It doesn't have the same kind of thematic concerns about relationships and stuff like that, but I think it's similar. Obviously, it's similar in terms of its setting, but also it's similar because of that patience, that intelligence, that commitment to making everything seem to the commitment to verisimilitude. Magellan's at the movie's favorite word.
Yeah, that is a good movie. That it, I would agree that we're going in different directions, but for the same reason. Because my recommendation is actually going to be Steven Soderbergh's first movie, Sex, Lies, and Videotape. What are you laughing for, Elliot?
No, well, it's just I talked about how this movie, like, it's mature because it doesn't have sexual content and violence and stuff. And here we have. But, go ahead. I've never seen this movie.
So well, I the thing that I was really struck by when I first watched Sex, Lies, and Videotape, and the reason why I'm recommending it for this movie, Black Bag, is because it is a very mature movie. It is a movie that is much like Black Bag. It's looking at, you know, the lies we tell to ourselves, the lies we tell to other people, how those lies get in the way of us forming genuine connections and relationships with people. I think the thing that I was really struck by when I first watched this movie was the fact that it was written by a guy who's like, I think he was like 2 years younger than me, or like almost the same exact age as me. And I was just blown away. Like, how was someone that young writing something that to my eyes and ears is so mature and carefully thought out and about, you know, not just simple thing. Like, sometimes you watch a movie and it's about like a simple concept, or it is, again, the contrast between Schindler's List and Zone of Interest. It's about, you know, a big concept, but it's tackling it in a different way. And so I was so struck by how, you know, well found this movie is and its depiction of stuff. Much like Black Bag, it's a very small movie. I think there's like, yeah, there's four major roles in the film, and that's pretty much it. Most of the movie is just these characters interacting and talking to each other, but it's so good. It really surprised me with how good it is, so that's going to be my recommendation for Black Bag.
Wow. Well, I haven't seen it, but
it's good.
I would like to after that pitch.
Good, good.
Here's one thing that I'll never lie to you about, and that's that life is hard and full of disappointments. That's that's the honest truth, and I'll always give it to you, honestly. No sugarcoating, no trying to cushion the blow. It's just, that's the way it is, all right?
Wow. Well, that's great. Did you watch Black Bag? Do you have thoughts on it? I always do this pitch. I love doing it.
Like and subscribe.
Send us an email. No, don't like, don't subscribe. Send us an email instead. you know, let us know your thoughts. We would love to hear them. If you have a request, then please, you know, send it in. We love watching, I love watching requests. Elliot loves watching them depending on how much he likes the movie.
I like getting requests.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't mean that I'll like the request itself.
We both like getting requests. Otherwise, we're going to be back next week. We're going to have a new episode. So be sure to tune in for that. Thank you for listening, and we hope you have a great week.